And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
Hey everybody, what's going on? It is DJ and the PBU, Rhett Lewis, in the house after a less than aesthetically pleasing Super Bowl. Rhett, what do you think? What do we call that thing?
Well, when one of the highlights of the game is a 65-yard punt.
That was a nice punt.
It was a Super Bowl record.
Yes.
By Johnny Hecker, which is, I guess, one thing the Rams can hang their hats on in this game.
Yeah. And no Buck today. Bucky was helping on the Sky Sports broadcast of the Super Bowl there.
Those are people.
Yeah,
I mean,
Move the Sticks has gone international.
That's right. It's a big deal.
We've cut in on a little bit of the turf there for the around the NFL guys.
Oh, no question.
So that's just part of the master plan there. But we're going to have some takeaways for you today.
Yes.
On this podcast, we'll have some more pods coming your way later in the week. We'll start jumping in. I know I tweeted that out last
night. Yeah, it was great.
So fired up. It was kind of, I couldn't sleep last night. And trust me, it was not because of the excitement of the game. Because I'm fired up. It's draft season. Oh, my gosh. That tweet out last night. Welcome to NFL draft season. Let's go, with a lot of exclamation points.
A lot of likes on that one.
And 5,900 likes.
There's a lot of folks
that are excited for draft season. Yeah. And then, of course, you get some people, oh, there we go, mock draft. Come on.
It's time.
Enjoy this season.
It's great. Yeah.
So, anyway,
I'm into it.
We're going to have some fun. But let's get to this Super Bowl 53 and some takeaways there. I'll jump in here first off here, Red. I just thought, man, the pass rush for the Patriots was pretty dominant. I just think when you look at this Patriots pass rush, Red, I tweeted it out last night. During the regular season, they were 30th in the NFL. They had 30 sacks during the regular season. They had 4 sacks in the game against the Rams in the Super Bowl and several other pressures, and they did it really with a lot of games. And I saw it firsthand doing the Charger playoff game with the Patriots. And, you know, a lot of times when people think about twists and stunts, they think about two guys working in tandem. The Patriots do it with three guys. It's
right.
Great, and it's just a lot to digest as an offensive lineman. They're able to get clean run-throughs, and then also, sold out on the cover zero blitz to generate the turnover on second down. I was trying to equate that Goff interception on second and 10, I believe.
Yeah.
And then just give up a scoring opportunity. It would be like throwing that pick on second and 10 would be like, what are the baseball rules? You never make the first out at third base. Like, there's all those unwritten rules. You know what I mean? Like, don't try and take the extra base.
Live to play another day.
Yeah, we're going
to
be on second base.
We got two downs. That's four down territory.
Yeah, it's just like baseball. You got a couple outs to play with there. So just an unfortunate decision by Goff there. But I thought up front, that Pats D-line, they might not have star power, but they did a nice job. And I got a text from a buddy in the league that said, if you look at what they're doing defensively, it's the same game plan they used against Jacksonville. You know, I don't believe they won that game earlier in the year.
Right. No, they lost.
But they played with an even front, so you've got four down. That's what they can do. They're kind of an amoeba scheme. They can go anywhere they want to go. In this game, they decided to play four down, and they also walked up the Sam and the Will on the line of scrimmage. So they've got six guys on the line of scrimmage and basically just saying, we're not going to let you run the football. And what that did is being able to stop the run on early downs, set the Rams up in some third and long, which when you get the Rams, when they're in third and two, third and two to third and four.
Dangerous.
Yeah, because you're going to get the run game, you're going to get play action, you're going to get boot. And when you get them in third and eight, now you eliminate the play action, you eliminate the boot, and that's a totally different offense.
That's a great point. And because Jared Goff was at his best this year on play action. That's where he was his highest rating came on play action passes. That's where their bread and butter was. That's where you get the chunk plays and the deep overs and Robert Woods and Brandon Cooks running free through the secondary. And look, we didn't see that really till late in the game. I mean, they only had two plays over 20 yards in this game, and both of them were on the final drive in garbage.
Yeah, the explosive play is just nowhere to be found.
Right. And you know what? I don't think every team can work that three-man game like the Patriots do. We talk about not having elite pass rushers. You're right, but you know, other teams may not have, you know, skilled linebackers like Kyle Van Noy and Dante Hightower who can rush that way. I go back to the first drive for the Patriots, and you get Adrian Claiborne running free on a stunt and just levels Jared Goff. That was a tone setter to me. That was like, all right, you know, we're going to be in for a long day here, and they were.
I want to give you this is a bonus takeaway because
yes,
I have it on
bonus.
The here. But you know who could be a little bit excited about that performance last night?
Who's that?
San Francisco 49er fans, because we saw their head coach, Kyle Shanahan, very similar scheme there. They come from the same family with there in McVay.
Yep.
Put up 28 points on that Patriots. Now, everybody talks about they blew that game. They blew the lead, 28-3.
Right.
Everybody talks about it.
Oh, right, for the Falcons.
But if you just look at the Shanahan versus McVay contest against a Patriots defense, edge to Shanahan.
Edge at the moment, for sure. And, You know, I think we'll get to it here.
Although Matt Ryan sacked 5 times in that game.
Oh, Jared Goff was only sacked 4 times.
Yes, only 4 times. But I'm just saying
he's hit 12 times.
I'm just saying though that the Patriots against this scheme. Now think about the history there of this offense with Bill Belichick and his history with Mike Shanahan.
Yeah, with Mike Shanahan.
I mean, he's
yeah.
these schemes back. Have existed for 20 years.
Yeah.
It goes beyond 20 years. So, obviously, protection-wise, Bill Belichick found something he can exploit a little bit in this scheme.
Yeah, he did. And, look, the Rams won the Built for Tough offensive line of the year. But
man, good plug. Good plug.
They may not have been challenged this way all year, yeah. The way the Patriots did.
All right, I'm going to go with my second takeaway here, then I'm going to give you the floor.
Give me the Rams side of it.
I'm going to go, look, to me, experience matters. I thought that was very evident. And you look at the Rams from the good side of things, like what went well for the Rams in this game? Well, defensively, they were outstanding.
Yeah.
Wade Phillips' experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it played in. You talk about somebody that's had some success against Tom Brady in this offense, and for a large portion of this game, they held this offense in check. Shoot, you give up 13 points, you should win a football game.
Yeah.
They were outstanding. I thought he did a great job. But then on the other side, we just talked about Belichick and his experience versus McVay and his experience. And you talk about Brady. When you had to have those one or two plays, Tom Brady found a way to get it done. And then Jared, you know, in that one moment when he kind of just panicked a little bit, got away from him. So I just thought the experience last year, it was the inexperienced Philadelphia Eagles that just dialed it up. They were ultra aggressive going forward on fourth downs, trick plays, you name it. They went for it, and they were able to overcome some of their inexperience. I thought the Rams' inexperience maybe showed up a little bit in this game.
I agree. I'll go back to the NFC Championship game, and we talked about it on the aftermath. After that one, you know, the best throw of Jared Goff's career to that point was the 6-yarder to Tyler Higbee that set up.
Was that the boot?
Yeah. That boot that he got past Cam Jordan, set up the 57-yarder from Zerline. In this game, I felt like the plan – and the Patriots' persistence in the pass rush set up that interception all game long.
Yeah.
All game long. Started from the first hit, as I mentioned, with Claiborne, you know, and getting popped by Hightower and Van Noy in his face all the time. And there was no breathing room for Jared Goff. And finally, you know, it came up with the INT and Gilmore. So
I got a little update for you here.
What do you got?
Hit me. You know, when you're constantly on the go, there's not much time to think about upgrading your style or apartment. That's why you love getting a new box of awesome from Bespoke Post. Every month, experience quality, unique products at boxofawesome.com. That's boxofawesome.com.
To get started, visit boxofawesome.com and answer a few short questions that will help them get a feel for your style. Each box costs less than $50, but has more than $70 worth of unique gear waiting inside. First of each month, you'll receive an email with your box details. You'll have 5 days to make changes, or if you're not feeling that month's box, then simply skip it. From barrel aging kits to limited edition cigars, weekender bags to classy dop kits, Bespoke Post offers essential goods and guidance for the modern man.
All right. To get 20% off your first subscription box, all you do is go to boxofawesome.com. Enter code STICKS at checkout. That's boxofawesome.com, code STICKS, for 20% off your first box. Bespoke Post, themed boxes for guys that give a darn. And I got to ask you one question. What is a drop kit? I don't know a drop kit.
Dop kit.
What's a dop kit?
Where all of you, where you put your toothbrush and your shaving stuff.
Oh, it's your makeup bag.
Well, yeah.
Shaving bag.
But for guys, it's a dop kit.
Okay.
Okay.
Shaving bag. I just thought it was a shaving bag.
Yeah. No, it's a dop
makeup
kit.
Bag, shaving bag.
Kit. Now you know.
Dop kit.
Oh,
not to be confused with
I
a drop
I didn't know
kit.
That was how to spell it, but right.
drop kick.
Yeah, totally different.
Yeah.
No. We're not talking about the Seahawks here.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. He had a great year for him.
Right, Michael Dixon. Yeah, it was good.
Great year.
Yeah, big time.
All right, let's get to your takeaways.
All right,
what do you got?
So
a dop kit, by the way.
Yeah, dop kit.
Okay,
dop kit. That's big. What's in Bill Belichick's dop kit? I don't know. A couple of blitzes.
A lot of Lombardis.
Yeah, a lot of Lombardis.
I remember back in the day, Bill Belichick had a quarterback named Doug Flutie that I believe had a dop kick.
You're right. You're absolutely right. Okay, so look, and this is kind of an all-encompassing thing that we can we'll start for the Patriots with. The plan is undefeated.
From the eye, Michelle the tailback behind Devlin. Brady under center, gives to Michelle, runs it left, a dive to the end zone. Touchdown, Patriots! Michelle for 6.
That's the offense I know. That's the offense we love. I told you, it could be 3 strange quarters, and we haven't seen this quarterback play in a while. But it's fourth quarter, and it's money time for the greatest guy to ever suit it up.
So... Zoe's loving it.
By the way, did I tell you about running into him at the Charger playoff game?
No.
Oh yeah, we're so at the Gillette where the radio setup is. It's almost kind of like a trailer, almost kind of. It's like a tin can setup below. And so there's not like you're up in the press box. So you come outside your little room where all the different radio rooms are set up. Indoors, mind you, indoors. And they have a little food tray out there. And spent some time with Iron Eagle. Great.
Oh, nice.
Zoe comes walking in, glasses, sunglasses on, indoors.
So don't mess with
chest me. Out.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, just feeling
chest hair up
just
there, like,
feeling
kinda
himself.
Unbuttoned probably one,
just 100% feeling
look,
himself.
I love Zoe.
Did I tell you what he said to me?
What?
Nothing. No, he didn't say
that. Look, Zoe, by the way, is a great artist.
Really?
Like, he can draw.
He's a vocal
artist. Yeah, Tommy Hodson told me that.
Really?
When they shared a roster with the Patriots back in the day. Anyway.
Right, go ahead.
Getting
go
back
ahead.
To it, Patriots' plan is undefeated. So, you know, we just heard the sock call, the only touchdown in the game, which was a Sony Michel touchdown run from 2 yards out. We'll start there. Their plan to go back to 21 personnel. Their plan to go back to power run. Their plan to make a commitment to the run game all year. And in this game, they were able to do it. Sony almost had 100 yards and the touchdown. Nobody could deal with it this year. We'll go back to – let's go back on the defensive side of the ball here. Their plan for the Rams – was fantastic. You talked about it with the pass rush and the ability to stop the run. I mean, this was one of the best rush teams in football all year long and in the playoffs. They were able to do it. And then, like, okay, now let's look. That was you know, that's looking at it in the landscape of this game. But take a broader picture now. The philosophy. Go back to personnel. Talk about Julian Edelman. I mentioned to you earlier, Tom Brady, best sixth-round pick in NFL
correct,
history.
Correct.
Julian Edelman might be the best seventh-round pick in
that's
NFL history.
That's a great
history.
Call. I can't think of one that would I surpass
can't
that.
I can't either. And Bill Belichick this morning was talking about how they scouted him. Got a tip from Rick Goslin, went up to Kent State, sent a bunch of coaches over there, worked him out twice. They're like, how are we going to use this guy? Well, you know what? They figured it out. Yeah. He'd never caught a pass before in his life in college. He never played defensive back in college. He did for the Patriots. Yeah. You know, like their plan with personnel is – you know, it's better than anybody. They do it with, you know, they generate the pass rush without elite blue chippers, right? They look for smart and character tough players. And then, you know, let's talk about in the framework of a game and in a season. You know what? They figure it out. Just hang on long enough. Bill will figure it out. Stay the course in the landscape of a game. And then in a season, they lose two games in December. Don't panic.
Yep.
We're going to be all right. It'll be all right. We're going to figure this thing out. And they do. And look, we'll give a ton of credit to Brian Flores, you know, who's probably going to head down to Miami here today to be the new head coach of the Dolphins. You know, the work that he did with Bill and figuring out this game plan and calling this game, I mean, was really impressive. Same for Josh McDaniels, who realized that, you know, at some point in this game, it was going to be the Patriots' best interest to get into heavy personnel and to try to throw against the Rams' base defense. And that was where they made their big adjustment, where they made, you know, their some of their biggest plays, like the play to Gronk that set up the Sony Michel touchdown. Their plan, whether it's personnel, whether it's in-game adjustments, or whether it's game plan, which we talk about a lot, it's undefeated.
Yeah, I wrote down on my paper here just, you remember the song PYT, Michael Jackson?
Of course.
STC is the Patriots, the smart, tough, and competitive.
Yeah.
And that's kind of that's the funnel that they put these guys through. And that's why their draft board each and every year, talk to guys that have worked there. Most teams have a top 150 list. Some teams even go beyond 150, which I think is ridiculous. You get down to 150, you're going to be in the seventh round. Somebody from your 150 is still going to be there. They get down to like 75, 80 guys because when they put them through that funnel, not all those guys can meet the criteria. Smart, tough, and competitive. Now, they have misses. You can go back through their draft history, and you'll find second, third
particularly round. In the second round.
Yeah, where they've had some whiffs there. But for the most part, the construction of their roster, those guys that are on the field, the 22 guys they're relying on in pressure situations, they're all smart, they're all tough, and they're all ultra-competitive. And people, by the way, people kind of snicker at that a little bit and go, oh, every football player is competitive. It's not true.
Yeah.
It is not true.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is what shows up in pressure situations. That's when you have those right types of guys, they're able to get it done. I mean, Hightower is a great example of that to me, of somebody that's just
no
smart,
question.
Tough,
and one of the few first-round picks on that defense.
Yeah.
Devin McCourty probably be the other. And I'll just say this, going back to your top 75 or 80 for the Patriots, they're not the top 75 or 80 players in the draft.
No.
They're the top 75 or 80 players for the Patriots.
Yes.
And I don't think we can emphasize that enough.
No, and that's one of the things that talking to our buddy, you know, Mike Mayock, who's gone to now work for the Raiders, and I told him this when he got that job, and he's definitely confirmed it, is having been on the team side of things, it's so much easier when you know what you're looking for your particular team.
Yeah.
Versus on the media side of things, trying to rank players arbitrarily and just, you know.
And for everyone.
Don't know how they're going to fit with certain teams. There's 32 teams out there. They're not all going to be a match for these guys. So
that's
something that they've done a masterful job there in New England of knowing exactly what they're looking for and going and find it.
And part of that plan for the Patriots led to my Rams takeaway, which is the Rams run game ran dry. I mean, it was as unimpressive a run game performance as we've seen from one of the best run game teams all year. Saints did a decent job on them as well. It's, you know, it's where we kind of figured out that the Todd Gurley thing wasn't working. You know, he had, five touches in the NFC Championship game. He played 40 snaps in the Super Bowl. He out-touched C.J. Anderson, but neither one of them impacted
7,
this game.
Yeah, 10 carries for 35 yards, and that was with a long of 16. So you look at those other 9 carries, not a whole lot going on.
So here's my question to you. Other teams have tried to stop Todd Gurley.
Yeah.
But they have not been as successful. You know, like, so at some point, do you say, okay, we got to find a way to get Todd involved in the pass game. We got to find a way to just get him the ball, you know, whether, you know, if they're taking away the stretch run that makes that made the Rams so successful for most of the season, then how else do we do it? You know, and then at that point, what do you say? You know, where do you go?
Well, let me answer your question in a roundabout way here. Kansas City Chiefs, even after they lost Kareem Hunt, still ran the ball pretty effectively.
Really well. Damien Williams against, really good.
Against the Patriots, 12 carries for 41 yards.
Okay.
The Chargers are a
team nothing.
That
19
was able
yards.
To run the ball pretty well throughout the regular season, and I know they were a little bit nicked up. Gordon was a little nicked up, 10 carries, 19 yards.
Yeah.
So when you look in the postseason, the Rams actually ran it better against the Patriots than the other two teams did.
All right.
So that's just something, you know, and that goes back, and to me it's a little bit of the experience there with Bill Belichick and what your goals are, what your priorities are. A lot of the people I've talked to defensive coaches in the league that will tell you, look, we're fine with giving up 3 and 4 yards, you know, even 5 yards on runs. We're going to protect against the big play, and we'll concede some of that. Belichick didn't concede an inch.
Yeah.
Nothing.
So, you know, Todd Gurley had a 16-yard run in this game. You take that out, it's 9 carries, 19 yards.
Yeah, nothing.
And it's like Melvin Gordon's territory.
Yeah.
They popped one, basically. And C.J. Anderson, I don't even think – did Todd had one catch – for minus 1 yards. He had 2 targets. I mean,
that was probably more surprising to me.
Right? Like
the screen game.
Screen.
Where's
non existent. I asked that at halftime when we were on air for 32 minutes while Maroon 5 was rolling
I missed
on.
That.
You missed
I
that?
Probably should have watched it.
Yeah. No, I was, me and Charlie Casterly and Will Blackman were sitting on air for 32 minutes talking about where is this Rams offense right now? And the biggest deal was they did not have the run game going, because that's how they generate the rest of their offense, with Robert Woods, with Brandon Cooks, with Josh Reynolds, when Cooper Kupp was there as well. And, you know, just couldn't get it done. Couldn't get it done. Couldn't get the play-action pass going, and therefore their offense was stagnant. I think, you know, Sean McVay mentioned, you know, admitted himself he felt like he was outcoached. He's kicking himself for not being able to get into the flow of the game, calling plays. And, you know, look, I mean, lesser coaches have fallen victim to Belichick. You know, I mean, like, Sean McVay is one of the very best out there right now, and just couldn't get into the rhythm of that game. So
no, I'm with you. The interesting thing is, offensively, you have things that build off one another.
Yeah,
and we can say the Rams have, you know, thrown to run. A lot of people say, you know, look, it's a passing league, and even they use play action, and then they are able to work that, and then they'll finish games out with the run game. But you've got to get it going. Got to get that going at some point in time. They couldn't.
It's, you know, the defense was so dominant for the Patriots that, like, we'll have to go back and watch the tape here in a minute, as we're going to do to get ready for the aftermath at 4 o'clock Eastern time today on NFL Network. But
final one of the year, by the way.
Yeah. Season finale of the aftermath. Glad to have you back for it, by the way. I can't even tell you, you know, like, watching the game, I can't even tell you what the Rams were, how they were trying to attack the Patriots.
Yeah.
And that's how good the Patriots' plan was, how dominant they were. It's like hard to even identify what the Rams really wanted to do.
I had my
They never really got into it.
My gosh, who was it?
I remember I have two boys. One's 15, one's 11. I don't remember which one said it, but during the game, at some point in time, they looked at me and said, "Dad, why don't they run a trick play?" And I thought, you know, maybe I'll listen to the 11-year-old right now. Because something, try something, try and get some kind of momentum going. They just couldn't do it.
They punted on 8 straight possessions. They didn't have a third down conversion until the 9th possession. They did not run a play in the red zone at all. They never got past the Patriots' 27-yard line.
That's incredible.
And they never had, on those first 8 possessions, they never had a drive go over 23 yards or a drive last more than 2 minutes and 23 seconds.
That's crazy.
You give Tom Brady that much time, he's going to figure it out, even on an off night.
No question. All right, Kent, what do you got?
Well, you guys mentioned Edelman and how big he was, ended up being MVP. The loss of Cooper Kupp, you watch this Rams team, they were a big play offense when he was out there. It opened up a lot deep. Without him, it did seem like that offense was limited to a point, and I'm curious how much you think the loss of Cooper Kupp, let's say for argument's sake he's healthy, is he basically an Edelman-type guy in this game?
Before he answers, you've been to church.
Yes.
Did church have a choir?
Yeah, I was in church choir as a kid.
You've heard the phrase, preaching to the choir. Correct. All right, go ahead, Rhett. Go ahead.
I'm so glad you brought that up, Kent, because I feel bad for my man Cooper.
I'm going to take a 10-minute break. Yep. I'll be back. We'll almost be done talking about Cooper Kupp.
All good.
At that one time.
Look, I could not agree with you more, Kent. And that would, without mentioning the fact that Josh Reynolds actually did a pretty good job in place of Cooper Kupp, I think it was going to be very difficult to duplicate what Coop gave the Rams, both in the run game and the pass game. He's lined up in there tight, down like inside the box. He essentially sometimes acts like a tight end for that team. You know, the way he can run through 11 personnel and great hands, obviously, runs great routes.
They don't use their tight ends anyways. At least yesterday. I don't know if they targeted
at all
the tight end.
Everett and Higbee were non-factors. Everett was targeted once, Higbee was zero. And we talked about that before we got on air, you know. And they've spent some high draft picks on those guys. Everett, they drafted before Cooper Kupp. And, Higbee was the year before, I believe, in the third round.
Correct. So. I think Everett made a couple big plays against the Saints.
Did he?
Yeah. I believe so.
Yeah. He made a couple big plays against the Chiefs, too.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
In that Monday night game.
No doubt.
So, anyway, I think I actually talked to Cooper on opening night. He wasn't doing any media, but, he came over and
But he was going to talk to you.
Yeah. He came over and chatted. We talked about his little son.
Question.
Bug. What's up?
Has Cooper Kupp been in the Rhett Lewis household?
Absolutely.
How many times?
We had him over for dinner.
Okay.
Him and his wife, Anna. Over.
I just want to get that on the record.
Yeah. They're great. They're great people. They're a great family.
You've known him forever. For those who don't know, Rhett's known him forever, going back to the Manning camp and your dad.
My dad
taped
his grandfather's ankles.
There you go. Yeah, grandfather.
Grandfather. Yeah.
What did you serve?
Hall of Famer, by the way.
What type of food? What did you serve?
Oh, we had some fish. Yeah. It was great,
Everett had 2 for 50 against the Saints, so maybe a couple plays.
Yeah, a couple plays. He had 2 touchdowns.
By the way, have you talked to your dad since the Senior Bowl? Since his visit?
No, what was his prognosis on you? Are you okay?
So, true story. Rhett's dad is unbelievable.
I met him at the Senior
Bowl. He's unbelievable. That's right. So, he's like my own personal trainer.
Yeah.
So, he's examined me for, like, my Achilles when I had my Achilles injury. I was at the Senior Bowl 1 year and was working through that. So, he showed me some of the things I needed to be doing there to help that get better. I called him on the phone. This is maybe 2 years ago. I was at my daughter's volleyball, and my knee was just kind of hurting. So I called Rhett, hey, I got to call your pops. All right, show me his number. So I got his number, so I call him. Dino, what's going on? Sorry to bother you. My knee's bothering me. He goes, okay, where is it? And I go, I don't know exactly. He goes, okay, you stand up. You have a chair there? I go, yeah. He goes, all right. Now bend down, sit in the chair. Where do you feel it? I go, oh, yeah. That's right here on my knee. He goes, okay. You hear, is there any kind of clicking? I go, hold on. Yeah, there's a little bit of clicking. Yeah, you tore your meniscus. I go, are you serious? He goes, yeah, you need to go to the doctor. So I go to the doctor. At the first, he looks at it, physical exam, goes, I think you're okay. But we're going to do an MRI just to be careful. Do the MRI. Oh, yeah, you got a torn meniscus. He's a genius. So then I've got a couple other things. I've got my shoulders kind of messed up. It's killing me. It's absolutely killing me. So I he comes to my room. He's not even staying in my hotel. Yeah. Comes to my room, full examination. Probably ought to get that looked at.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, when you've been – this was his 48th year at the Senior Bowl.
Unbelievable.
I mean, he existed before MRIs, so that
makes
sense,
so great.
Right?
He's old.
He's super old.
He's the best.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, he's built some special relationships just from the Senior Bowl alone in making – house calls, essentially.
Yeah.
The guys that just something happened.
Move out to California.
Can we,
does he want to be around the grandbabies? Let's get him out here.
Yeah, let's get him out here. It's
let's
a good
move
idea.
Him out here. Make my life a lot easier. Save me a little bit of money and healthcare.
Yeah, really. I know. No kidding.
Not cheap.
Man,
at
if
all.
I would have known that, I could have asked him a couple questions.
Yeah, come on, a couple ailments.
Yeah.
Anytime, I'll change his number. No problem.
By the way, I know you mentioned earlier Zolak's a great artist. What's a skill both of you guys have that people wouldn't know? Like the fact that he's a good artist. Like what's something you do that's non-football related that you do?
I'll tell you this, and I haven't done it in a while, but when I was let go by the Browns, I had 18 months. The Browns love to pay people for not working there. So I had 18 months. That's when I kind of started my media stuff before I ended up going taking a job with the Eagles. Mm-hmm. But during that point in time, I had some other offers, but I decided let's just – spend a year at home and try and get the media thing going, family time. I got incredibly bored. I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah.
During that period of time. I was in the best shape of my life.
Oh.
Working out every day. It was great.
Yeah.
But my wife came in one day, and she didn't even know this was going on. And my daughter at that time was probably, maybe 10, 11. And she goes, "Wow, Lauren, your hair looks great." Yeah, Dad flat ironed it. I was flat ironing hair. I'm like, kids, she'd be like, I'm going to get ready. I'm like, oh, let's see this thing. I started working. Turns out I'm an excellent flat iron artist.
Wow.
Yes, I can flat iron hair. Now, I haven't done it since then, but there was that 18 months, I was like a hairdresser.
Draft guru by day, hairstylist by night.
Yes.
Wow.
Oh, I know my way around a flat iron, Rhett.
Okay.
Where do you go from there?
Let me just clap for you on that.
It is what it is.
I am a laundry savant.
That does not surprise me in the least.
I'm home a few days a week.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. Hey, so like, you know, I think my wife actually had a Instagram post recently. It was like, I'm thankful for a husband that does the laundry.
There you go.
Like, look, I'm telling you right now, I mean, I'll get you 6 or 7 loads done in a day. You know, like I'm going to be on top of that.
Nice.
And
How about sorting and folding? We good at that?
Sorting, folding, you know, I'll get you the turd. I'll get you a little fabric softener. And like I'm going to pre-dry for 7 or 8 minutes. I'm going to pull your stuff out. I'm going to hang it up.
Okay.
You know, I'm going to get it all done for you.
Yeah. That's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. I could also navigate Zillow and Redfin probably better than anybody.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I love property.
Yeah. I like to see that. Kent, you want to chip in there?
What do you got, man?
I played the viola for 9 years growing up.
Of course you did.
My high school actually went to Disney World and did one of the Pirates of the Caribbean openings, and we played the music for the opening and all that stuff. So it was viola. So
wow.
Our high school orchestra was pretty good. I think we had the best high school orchestra in the state of Pennsylvania for about 10,
clap
15
it up
years,
for
so.
Kent.
So the viola.
By the way, guys, what's the viola again?
It's a larger violin
yeah.
and then basically it has the same strings as a cello. So instead of having the E string, which is a higher string, it has the C string.
Of course it does.
So there you go. So the viola for 9 years. Got involved in that in 4th grade and did that all the way up
good
until
for you,
I graduated
Kent.
High school. So.
Proud of you, man.
I don't know if you saw the tweet that I had, Rhett, but it was another kind of a bonus item here for things that I did that people might not know. Jay Billis had tweeted out the commercial that he was in, and this would have been, 1988.
Yeah.
It was his first commercial that he did. It was a Minolta. I believe it was a Minolta. It was a camera commercial.
Okay.
And it was, the whole thing was about this little camera that they had, and the little camera is as good as the big camera. So it was Jay Billis, you know, 6'10", whatever he is, and some little kid, and they're outside playing hoops, and the little kid's like dribbling between his legs, and da-da-da-da. The little camera's as good as the big camera.
Sure.
That was the whole thing. So I auditioned for that commercial as an 11-year-old. Swin Nader was a family friend. He played for the Lakers, played forever in the NBA out of UCLA, was 6'11". And somebody had approached him about this commercial. And so he knew I'd been to all his camps and everything. He knew I peaked as an athlete at 12. I readily admit that. But I think I was if there was an All-American team at like 11 or 12, that was me. Unfortunately, I never got any better.
But anyway,
so he said, let's go. I want you to come to this audition with me. So we go. It's in San Diego, and we're out at this outdoor court. Anyways, do the whole thing. I wore a Rude Dog t-shirt. I don't know if anybody remembers Rude Dog.
No.
It was a Rude Dog tank top. It was pretty sweet. It was a little dog. It was kind of like the Spuds McKenzie type thing.
I like that.
So anyways, do the audition in San Diego. Goes well. I get a call back. Going to UCLA. We're going to go to UCLA and have the second round.
Yeah.
So and it's me. So me and Swin had been paired up together, and he would let me shoot and da da da. So then they split us, and so he had to work with some other kids. I had to work with a couple other big guys. Well, the big guys I was working with were jerks. They're like blocking all my shots. I'm like, this is bullcrap. You're supposed to be trying to prop me up here.
No,
you're making
they
me look.
Into it.
They made me look bad. They really made me look bad. So neither one of us get it. But I had told my wife about this. You know, a couple times over the years,
I couldn't remember who it was or what. Then Billis tweets out, hey, it's my first commercial. And I'm like, son of a gun, Jay Billis. He might have been the guy that was blocking my shot.
I bet he was.
Yes. He was making me look bad.
Have you confirmed that?
But I just think, what happens if I get that job? This is 1988.
Well, you're not here right now.
No.
Me and my twin brother.
I think probably soap operas for a couple years.
You guys might have actually left Temecula and moved up to L.A. You might be a Hollywood star right now.
I could have been on Silver Spoons for crying out loud. Who knows?
Yeah, I'm from Pittsburgh, so we didn't have quite the opportunity that you have here in Southern California. But I am an identical twin. And as you know, twins are in demand when
it
comes to ads.
You're an identical twin?
Yeah, I'm 8 minutes older than my twin brother. So
that's great. Yeah. You don't even know.
My mom's an identical twin. I've got a family full of identical twins.
Yeah, it's just basically, I think we're the only ones.
So you guys, we have a commercial or something?
So we went for an ad for a bike ad when we were kids. I think we were like, we were 3 years old maybe. And so what they do is, I guess they need to see how aware kids are. Can they listen? That's one of the biggest things. So they put different coins out on the floor for us. My mom's told me the story countless times. And they say, pick up this coin. Don't touch this coin. I apparently listened. My twin brother picked up all the coins, put them in his pockets, and we never got the call back. So
it's your brother and Jay Billis are responsible for us being where we are right now.
I know. And now my twin brother is an elementary teacher, so he's dealing with young kids all the time.
That's what he deserves. That's what he deserves.
Hey, can I just let us get out of here on this one thing? I don't. If you're on Twitter, you know, there was like the alternate Super Bowl Twitter, which generated from New Orleans, where they had essentially a parade. In boycott of the Super Bowl.
Okay.
You know, the
I did not know that.
You didn't know that?
I did not know
that. They literally packed the streets of the French Quarter and surrounding areas in New Orleans like it was Mardi Gras Day.
Oh, wow.
It was unbelievable. And by the way, just to confirm, this is from my buddy Jeff Duncan, who works down in New Orleans, said Super Bowl 53 earned a 26.1 rating in New Orleans, the lowest of any market and the lowest ever in New Orleans.
Wow. There you go.
Hey, if you can say one thing about folks down in New Orleans, they're committed.
They're loyal.
They're committed. They're going to go all in on partying and all in on missing the Super Bowl if they felt like it. So,
there you go.
There you go. All right, that's it.
That's good. All right, let's get out of here. We'll be back in a couple days here with more podcasts. Actually, probably tomorrow. We're going to have some draft stuff.
Path of the Draft is at the Combine this year.
Yes, how
Wednesday
about that?
And Thursday of Combine Week.
Nice.
And then we get started full on in middle of March, so right after free agency. It's coming, baby. Let's go.
I've been cranking on players. We're going to be talking about a bunch.
Excited about it.
As we get there. All right,
cool.
PBU, Rhett Lewis in the house. Thank you so much. We'll see Bucky back in here on the next Move the Six podcast episode. Appreciate you guys listening. We'll catch you next time.